With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Well, hey, welcome into a special holiday week edition of the Show Before the Show podcast, the official podcast of minor league baseball. As my name is Tyler Vaughn, and I am joined for the first time, just the two of us. That might not be true, but for an entire episode by your best pal and mine, Josh Jackson. What's going on, dude?
Welcome back to Not Quite Ghosts of the Minors. How's it going?
But a Ghosts of the Minors-centric episode, which I'm very excited about as we welcome you all into this latest special edition of the show before the show. You and I...
Happy New Year to everybody out there in Radio Land.
Whenever you're tuned in to this edition of Ghosts of the Minors slash the Show Before the Show. It is, we're recording this on New Year's Eve. Tomorrow it will be the year 2022, which you would have asked me when I was a kid, like, what do you think life will be like in 2022? Probably wouldn't have forecasted this. But hey, you know, we're a new year dawns with all the promise of the last one, and hopefully it goes better than the last one did. But if there is one fun thing that we discovered in our lives in 2021, it is the hottest thing in the podcasting landscape, the podcast scape. I don't know if that, the podcast sphere. I meant sphere, which is the addition of Ghosts of the Minors to the Minor League Baseball podcast, which is the brainchild of one Joshua Jackson, and has become one of the most fun things that we have done on the show. And I wanted to do a special episode. We got no Sam this week, so I figured Josh and I would finally get a chance to talk about ghosts and its genesis and all of those things. It's been a fantastic thing for us to add to the show. It's added such a fun element to the show. I take zero credit for Ghosts of the Minors. Everything you hear in that show is Josh's brainchild. It's Josh's writing. It's Josh's research, his jokes, and it is all amazing stuff. I know that everybody has fallen in love with it. We've gotten so much positive feedback on it. I'm just going to talk for the entire show, so I hope that you're okay with that.
Can I speak now? I'll start by immediately disagreeing with you.
Embrace debate. This is 2004 ESPN.
I agree with you that, you know, it's certainly the most fun thing that I've been involved with on the podcast. But you know for a fact that you do a tremendous amount of work in making the segment sound great every week and helping it have the appropriate I don't know if the word aesthetics applies to audio, but
good question.
Vibe is the 21st century word to use. You give it a vibe, Tyler. You help create its vibe, and for that I know that a lot more work goes into that than you're probably going to admit here. And I would also like to take a minute to say that both you, or all three, you and Sam and Ben, contribute jokes to it weekly.
Mostly those two. I'm not funny.
I disagree. Ben, especially the reason, you know, we mentioned at the end of every episode, my producer, Ben Hill, is he's always getting into some sort of trouble or I'm always saving him from some sort of trouble or helping him get into some sort of trouble. And he truly is a producer in that he, from the get-go, has been an advocate for the show. And in this iteration, I mean, I think we can even say that it was his idea. There was a thing I actually found right before we started talking. I just found this document from a few years ago that I put together for Ben and I were talking about doing some different things. And I'd wanted to have like a quiz where we tried to stump Ben's biz. And it had a lot of the a lot of elements from Ghost of the Miners. Yeah, I think that's sort of where the kernel was for me in getting together like a quiz show that would be just for Ben's biz. And then at the beginning of this run, Ben was the one who brought this up and said, hey, there's a segment to be had here with that's, you know, right up Josh's alley. So I can't even say for sure that it's, you know, my brainchild. What I'd like to do now, Tyler, if you'll allow it,
I'll indulge,
is tell you about originally with this quiz with Ben was not only going to be about teams, but he was also going to have to pick out made up players versus actual players who played in the minors.
And that would be very tricky because there have been hundreds of thousands of dudes who have played in the minors.
Would you like to play around right now?
I absolutely would.
Which of the following minor league baseball players actually did exist and play minor league baseball at one point in history? A, Brother Martin. B, Young Boozer. C, Jonas Koplak.
I gotta go with Young Boozer.
Correct.
Yes!
Young Boozer is the guy. Indeed, Young Boozer.
Please tell me that his father was known as Old Boozer. Elder Boozer, perhaps.
Only in the family. They weren't vocal about. He was Young Jake. His full name actually was Young Jacob Boozer.
So his name was actually Young Boozer. It was not a nickname.
That's Baseball Reference has him here as Young.
That's incredible.
Boozer, and he played for the 1937 Dothan Browns.
Okay. Or
Browns in the Alabama Florida League, which was somewhat recently featured in Ghost of the Miner.
That is amazing. I'm just very glad that I got it. I want to, much like Homer Simpson in the game in which he beats Bart in video game boxing, the episode when he beats Bart in video game boxing, I want to retire undefeated.
You won't tell me then whether Dana Furtzwiler or Ruben Smiley or Ben is the real minor baseball player.
Dana Furtzwiler sounds like a fantastic old timey minor league baseball player.
It's Ruben Smiley.
Ah, come on, Ruben.
We could go on and on with
ruined me.
The likes of Butsy Zimmerman and Sheriff Robinson and Ron Kump.
There are some amazing names and stories and histories throughout the long scope of minor league baseball. And that's one of the things that makes Ghost of the Miners so endearing week after week is you're telling people's live stories that have been largely forgotten. I mean, there's, you know, a book out about the 1948 Cleveland Indians, or there's a story about the, you know, the New York Giants, the year that they, the Giants win the pennant when they had the comeback win over the Brooklyn Dodgers by erasing that big deficit in the division by stealing signs. You know, there are these major league seasons and teams and moments and players who have been, you know, maybe at times forgotten or glossed over, who get their moment. But that is not really the case with so many of the subjects of Ghosts of the Miners. In fact, I don't even know if I can think of a single team where I'm like, oh yeah, I've definitely heard that story before. And that's what makes Ghosts of the Miners so cool. The thing that has stood out to me week after week is the amount of research that you put into telling the stories of these teams in our brief little segments, 3 to 5 minutes, whatever it is. Which I know can be a substantial challenge. And we actually have one coming up that I'm not going to give you the team name because I don't want to ruin what it is. But I suggested the team name to you because I found it in some other research. And when you and I were talking about when that team was in existence, it was like, you know, the 1890s. And that makes research really, really challenging. Give us the rundown of how you research these teams and some of the roadblocks that you run into and some of the workarounds that you're able to find.
Some of the workarounds, I'll start with that right there, because some of them will be familiar to you as somebody who's written about minor league baseball and minor league history. One thing about if you're writing or making any sort of proclamations about minor league baseball or minor league history is that you never want to say something was the first or the only, unless
that is very true.
Unless you know for certain, which you probably don't, because we do, you know, this is both the challenge and sort of a blessing, is that we have a tremendous amount of history to draw from
here. Yes.
In terms of how many leagues there were, and, you know, still are, and how many teams there have been in how many different towns across over, you know, well over 100 years at this point. So there's plenty there. And yes, I, what's the question again? I think both, yeah, the challenges and the joys of research are sort of the same. It's hard to find things, and it's really fun to look for things, for me anyway. And hopefully, yeah, it is. I do try to get as much of a, you know, it's important to me that the segment stays snappy and yeah, feels entertaining and not like homework, especially there are many kinds of minor league baseball fans out there. And I know, you know, this segment is not necessarily one that's going to be everybody's favorite, but I do want to keep it something that somebody who's not especially interested in minor league history isn't going to go, oh my God, this guy is droning on and on about about this team from 1936, and I couldn't give a care if I tried. And so I do try to keep it short, but I also do want to get in as much info about the team as I can while we're having fun about them. And sometimes there are teams where I find a lot of information, and sometimes there are teams where whatever you hear me say in the segment is basically the only thing I was able to find about this team. And I've really, you know, pulled my hair out to try to get anything that I could to get into the segment.
The amount of, you know, old timey newspapers that Josh researches and dives into and pours over and sifts through, not in a physical sense, but thanks to the internet, is pretty incredible. The one thing that I've wanted to know throughout so many of these is, week to week, how do you come up with what is next? Like, in what structure have you found all of these wacky team names? And do you have a list? Do you have like a, all right, well, for the next, you know, 4 months, I'm covered because I've got, you know, 24 insane names of teams. How does that process go?
So in this same document that I had those lists of player names, which include the likes of Pidge Brown, Enon Califf, and Con Starkle, those are all three guys actually played. In that list, I also do have a list of team names. I haven't used very many of those. I'm not sure how I came to them, but I will tell you this. Coming up with the team for next time is usually the thing that I save till last, and I forget that I still have it ahead of me, and it takes a colossal amount of time. I don't have a super efficient way of doing it, but I do think I have a pretty good way of doing it, which is sort of just looking around. just looking around. I try to vary the points in history that we're at. I try to get a good mix of, okay, this one's from the 1890s, this one's from the 1930s.
Fun fact, I try to marry the background music to the era of the team.
I've noticed.
I don't know if anybody's ever. I was going to say, I don't know if anybody's ever noticed that, but I do try to.
I certainly appreciate that.
Get like some swing big band music for teams in the 30s and 40s, some like ragtime music from teams in the teens, you know. The 1890s, I don't even know if they had invented music yet. I don't think
you got to break out the fiddle.
Just some old moonshiners tunes. But anyway, please continue.
So I don't have a good answer to that question.
That is a good answer, though.
Okay. I just try to, you know, I say, okay, so we just did one from the 50s. And sometimes I'll say, you know what? It's been a long time since we've done two from consecutive decades or da da da. I'll use this one, but usually I start with the period. What time period do we want to go to next? And then from there, and yeah, that's all very, you know, somewhat arbitrary. I think, oh, it would be fun to do the, you know, the early 50s next week. Let's see what's out there. And look around at what leagues we're playing and try to find, a team that I know we could have some fun with the name of. And it helps too if a player with a name like Carlton Molesworth on that team, because then I probably end up not using as many player mentions as I plan on using, just because I'll find a player with a name like Carlton Molesworth and I'll think, oh, we should use one of his teams. And then I find out, you know, there's much cooler stuff about, for example, the Elmira team with no team name of 1900 than the fact that Carlton Molesworth played for them.
And it's fun, too, because some of the best content in Ghosts of the Miners episodes are the fake team names that you come up with alongside the real team names. Do you have a favorite of the fakes that you have come up with, or multiple favorites? And B, what is the process for coming up with such convincing sounding names? Because you've done, I think the only time that I knew one of the ones to eliminate was you used Denver. You had the Denver Dungarees as one of the fake teams. And I'm well versed enough with baseball history in my hometown that I was like, well, I know that team is never real. So I think I guessed correctly of the other two during that week's episode. But you always come up with like very, okay, I could believe that that would exist.
I think just from having worked in minor league baseball and read about minor league baseball for a while, I did email myself a list of all the fake names a while ago. So now I'm looking for that list. Nothing off the top of my head. Well, hold on one second. You can go ahead. Let's use the radio technology to skip over this part where I frantically look for a list. But I think I'm getting close. I've got to be getting close.
I'm just leaving this part in because
I know
the beginning
are.
Of the episode that is this would be the most heavily edited episode I've ever had to do, but I'm just gonna leave it all in.
I did say that. I liked the Allagash North Stars being
that was good. Being a Maine
native, yeah, and living here in Maine and knowing that the word or the name Allagash has gotten some prominence elsewhere in the country because of a beer. And North Stars, it's in far northern Maine. So I thought that was a sensible team. It's not a sensible team in that geographically, there's not a lot of other teams they would have been able to play. It's all logging roads up there. They would have had a hard time finding another nine to go up against.
They would have been able to produce a lot of bats, but they would not have had a lot of opponents to play against.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. Yeah, I also am a fan of the Lafayette Shrimp Freezers. I love some of my favorite teams are those that are named after a town's industry.
Oh, absolutely. There was a furniture maker's
Bassett furniture maker.
Bassett in North Carolina, correct?
Yes. And I'll tell you in my browser, my work browser, I am continually getting ads now for furniture made in North Carolina because of the research that I did for that episode.
That is incredible.
The most common ad I get is either from...
Don't you want this new ottoman? Yeah, that company still exists, Bassett Furniture.
Yeah, or I get from their competitors. It's like, oh, you think Bassett's so nice? Check out this nice chair.
Oh man. So when you are, because, you know, so obviously you'll pick a team that's from a geographic region. We're like, you know, the Lafayette shrimp freezers, obviously you're going to pick in a region that has shrimp. Have you ever done, in order to come up with like a fake team name, have you ever thought like, well, I don't know anything about, you know, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I should Google what they would have been known for in the 1920s.
I have done that. So you're shining more light on my process here than this.
I'm asking those digging questions.
Episode for a lot of people. I apologize to all of you. Happy New Year. But yeah, you're shining more of a light on my process than I have myself. I do often, you know, if I start with a real team, and let's say that the real team is in Florida, I'll say, okay, let's get a fake team from the Great Plains. Let's get a fake team from the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
And I will sort of look at, okay, what town is plausible? What town, you know, town demographics are interesting.
Yeah.
There are towns that are out there now that had much larger populations.
Yeah.
In days of yore than they have now, or that have about the same population, except the population of the United States has exploded. So, you know, having a town of 10,000 people in the year 1900 is very different than a town of 10,000 people now. So those are things I look into. And then alliteration is also a big one, because alliteration has always been a way that people will name their teams.
Yeah.
Because it sounds nice.
I remember when the Omaha Royals were changing their name and became the Storm Chasers, one of the possibilities they tossed out there was the Omahogs, because there had been a team in the early 1900s, late 1800s named the Omahogs. And I also think it's funny too, because it connects us to this era of minor league baseball where, you know, every time, especially Brandios is the company that generally comes up with the wackiest names of minor league baseball rebrands. And every time a new Brandios rebrand comes out, people pan it and they hate it and talk about how stupid it is and how embarrassing it is and blah, blah, blah. And then of course they come around and those teams all end up being the top merchandise selling teams in minor league baseball and all of that. But on top of that, it really does tie into the history of minor league baseball, because wacky names have been part of minor league baseball as long as baseball has been part of minor league baseball, which is a really cool thing to tie in with Ghosts of the Minors too, because I think it sheds light on the fact that this is part of the fabric and the identity of the minor leagues throughout its entire history.
That's absolutely correct. And something that I think about a lot with this segment. And, you know, this is a little bit of a downer, but the same is to be said with cities losing their teams.
Right.
It's heartbreaking when a city loses its team, but it's also something the whole premise of this segment is that very few teams, statistically speaking, last through even one person's average lifetime.
Right. Right.
That's a rare thing. And you know, I take from that the same thing that I take from the knowledge that we will most likely die at some point. It's that we've got to treasure what we've got here.
Right.
And I hope that that's also sort of the message of each episode. I mean, I try to keep funny and light and everything, but that, you know, most of these teams had, I guarantee you, all of these teams had at least one or two fans who just loved them.
Right.
And, you know, market realities have always been a part of the minor league baseball landscape.
Especially back then, too. You know, when these teams were existing in leagues that were only around for 2, 3,
right,
4 years, or the Depression.
Or hit. 1 year. Or it would start. And,
right, exactly. Yeah,
start and be over by July.
There was a team that fold. I did research for, we did a few companion pieces at MILB.com for Ghosts franchises, and I did one, and I can't remember what this team was, but yeah, I believe the season started in a league in April and had dissolved, the whole league had dissolved by June. Yeah. They're like, eh, we're not going to be able to make it. What?
And it's one team, you know, was making money. Nobody else was.
Right, or exactly.
Or nobody was. And, or like, you know, three teams fold in a five team circuit.
Right.
What are you gonna do, you know? Now, I mean, in that, looking at things in that, from that perspective, we can be thankful that things are as stable as they are, in minor league baseball, you know, over the last decades, really. I mean, it's been decades since we've had leagues go under midseason. So that message really is, if you love a team you've got, make sure you love the team you've got.
Because at some point, we hope the scythe's remorseless swing can bring comfort to you all.
we hope that day never comes for your team.
That was just a deep cut quote from a TV show that Josh put me on like 3 years ago that I've become obsessed with, and we text each other quotes from regularly. But no, it really is true. And it is fascinating to look back on so much of the history of minor league baseball and realize, like, oh yeah, these teams could have made huge impacts in these communities, and they were only there for a very, very short time. For every Toledo Mudhens franchise, for every Chattanooga Lookouts franchise, for every Rochester Red Wings franchise, teams that have been in the same place, have had the same name, have had, you know, the same fan base, all of that for generations. For every one of those, there are dozens of teams that didn't make it past a couple of years. And it also speaks to a much different era in sports in America, in which teams were the fabric of their towns in a lot of ways. Towns put together teams to compete against other towns because, like, that was recreation. That was the thing to do. People didn't have smartphones and TVs and concerts to go to and all of that. It was, okay, well, why don't we get some local guys together and let's go play against, whatever, the neighboring town.
Shelbyville,
exactly. The Shelbyvillians. And that's really cool about minor league baseball history, too, is I love when, you know, you talk about the Three Eyes League for Indiana, Iowa, and Illinois, or the Nebraska State League, or the Texas Louisiana League, or the Louisiana Florida League, or whatever it is. The minors at the time, and obviously they were so much less codified and structured than they are now, but they were so grassroots and so hyper local. And that's what honestly makes it fascinating that you're able to do research on teams like this, is the fact that you're writing and talking about teams that existed, you know, 100 years ago in some cases, and nobody outside of their town and maybe the towns in their league ever heard of them. And now we can bring their stories to people on a podcast. And I just find that very cool.
It is very cool. I'm not sure about this whole internet thing.
But right, it might be a passing fancy.
One thing I'll say for it is that as recently as, I was going to say 5 years, probably 10 years ago, a lot of the newspapers that I consult, a lot of the archives that I have access to online had not been digitized yet. And there are still obviously plenty out there that still haven't. And so if I were to do research on some of these teams, really not that long ago, I would have had to probably go to a local library in Winona, Minnesota, or, you know, pick your town and, you know, take a look at the microfiche or the microfilm that they had, which I love to do. And I wouldn't mind doing, especially in non-COVID times, traveling around to libraries and looking at various microfiche until I find everything I need. But it is remarkable how much I'm able to find, how much one is able to find sitting in one's office and looking at a computer screen.
Yeah, it is pretty fascinating and amazing stuff. And we have just loved it so much. The guy who, and I think I've mentioned this on every single episode of the show before the show since the tweet, but there was a guy who tweeted at us around Thanksgiving that this was his favorite thing on any podcast ever. And it just, like, that lit me up with so much happiness. And it is all credit to the man on our radio airwaves, our podcasting waves in radio land, Joshua Jackson, who is very close to the camera now, as though he has something really profound to say.
Well, I'm going to leave the way I entered, denying that I'm the person who should be getting all this credit here, when this really is a team effort. Ben really did, you know, a lot of work in getting this going, and you do a lot of work every week, and Ben and Sam and you all do work in with the script before I so much as turn on my old-fashioned microphone to do a recording and lay down the recording on wax cylinder.
Right. That's how Josh delivers it to me every week. It's via carrier pigeon. I don't even know where he gets them, but he sends carrier pigeons with his wax cylinders weekly. I have to digitize them. I got to put the effects in. It's a whole thing. One remarkable person out there birds. Is like, whoa, really?
They're remarkable birds. Maine to Colorado in a period, in a period of hours.
And they don't lose the wax cylinders. It's incredible. It's really incredible stuff. Well, this has been so much fun. A special edition of the Show Before the Show podcast to bring you the story behind Ghosts of the Miners, which you can catch in its triumphant return to the radio waves coming up next week. Josh Jackson, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, and thank you all out there in Radio Land for tuning in.
He's Josh, I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you for a regular episode of the Show Before the Show coming up next week.